Hello and welcome to The Dive, Season 7, Episode 8.
Thank you.
There you go. Welcome you. Welcome you.
Welcome you.
Welcome you. Welcome me.
Mm-hmm. Welcome the audio people.
Now we're all
welcome
here.
To the control room. Recording this. Editors.
Whoever's got this light on that's just blinding.
Whoever built that
love
light.
That one. That's great light.
Whoever built that yeah. light. Okay.
Batch 13.5. How about it?
ARAM rubble's gone, baby. Woo! I'm having the time of my life. I can play if I immobile champions and walk up and not feel screwed. It feels great.
You can also not just get walled off by Anivia completely or zoned out by any of 100 different abilities or poked over the wall or hooked over the wall.
So you tweeted about this recently. I think it was last week or a week and a half ago. Yeah. I can't remember. But you tweeted about it. I commiserated. And then they responded saying that, like, a lot of that was due to like the security breach that happened that like delayed potential changes or something. So either way, just glad it's gone. I've been spamming a lot of ARAM this patch. Been having a lot of fun with it.
Great. Didn't notice. Never play ARAM.
That's true. Well, actually, you play sometimes. About once a year on average.
I haven't done my one per year.
We got to get him in with us one time.
It's still early.
Yeah. It's still early in the year. We got some time.
Between 10 and midnight is when we're usually playing.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Usually get in there for some ARAMs late.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck when you're playing.
All right. We'll see you there, buddy.
I've been playing a lot of SR as well. And I'm happy Aesol got some nerfs. I feel like, I don't know. I think a lot of people are frustrated by Aesol. I think I'm kind of like, the more I play against it, the more annoyed I am by this champion for a variety of reasons. It just kind of feels like, the more I think about it, I just think it's an updated Anivia, basically. Like, it's like a modernized Anivia almost, right? Where it is this like super strong wave clear champion, but it doesn't have a lot of the weaknesses that a lot of the other champions that people compare it to do. People are like, well, it's just like a wave clear mage, you know, it's just like an Anivia or a Ziggs or a Victor or whatever.
It can also fly over all the walls and
exactly. And I've seen people compare it to Kayle as well and stuff when I tweeted about it and kind of complaining, and people were saying, oh, well, it's just like Kayle or this, and if you lose to it, it means that you're bad at punishing it. And my issue is that not only does it have some ability to escape with a W, I really just don't like the way that the E functions, where it actually like holds the minions in place. Because one of the ways that you punish a lot of these like weak early game champions is by actually stacking the wave, having it crash on the tower, and wrapping around. But like with just EQ, you can almost full clear like entire waves and hold them off your turret. It makes it very difficult to approach. It makes it very difficult to actually punish this champion. And I feel like it just really encourages this super non-interactive playstyle where, sure, there are some answers. Like, you can play some assassins into it. You can play some like long-range mages that can punish it. But the reality is you're not always counterpicking, right? And if the only answer to this champion, which always seems to be the argument that people have, is these niche counterpicks, then it's like, well, then there's something wrong, that if you can't ever let this champion through unless you are actually counterpicking. And I think that's why the ban rate for it is so high. I see it banned an enormous amount of my games. And from just anecdotally, the data that I've seen online has it around like 50-55% ban rate. Because it is just, it's a very frustrating champion to have in your game, because it feels like you're on a clock, but it's so tough to punish compared to, I think, a lot of the other champions in the game that also feel like you're kind of on that clock against.
I love it. I'm on the complete other side. It's Cosmic Space Dragon Fantasy, late game scaling. Can't stop me. Can't stop, won't stop. I love it. I love things that do dots, you know, that EQ combo. You're just melting people. Mm-hmm. Feels great. Has an execute on it. Sure, why not? Love that. people might think I'm being sarcastic, but I actually really do like the new Aurelion Soul. I think it feels fun to play. I don't know.
I think it's fun. I think
it's
pretty
cool
to watch.
I like the big old boom boom.
But it almost feels like one of those things where it's like almost like single player design, where you're not thinking about the play against experience nearly enough, where you can make a champion that feels cool to play, but then it's so horrible for the other people on the other team, right? It's like,
I like the Q design and the drive-by cues, kind of breathing fire while flying thing. That's pretty cool. Because you said you like the big boom boom.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the charged up big boom boom ult shaking the whole screen with all the lights and kind of blinding is too much visual? Because I feel like visual clarity, I know for a fact this has been something that has always been integral to the design phase and something that Riot wanted to keep clear. Do you think you're hitting some bounds with this half a map ulti shine?
Two thoughts. Yeah. One, big boom, boom, who cares?
Yeah, big rocks.
Yeah, boom, goes explode. I love it. Second thing is, I know Riot says that, and I think on some level they care a lot about visual clarity, but I also feel like with all the skins in the games and like a lot of the blending of thematics where they all look the same, that doesn't matter. Like, it's kind of scuffed already. The things that throw me in the game are like when there's three Darkstar champions, and like their projectiles all look the same, and something's coming out of me out of brush, and two of them are on the same team, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. That kills me a lot more than a shockwave. So like, maybe that's not a good argument, but it is the one I'm presenting.
Your argument of there's already
it's a red herring over here. Hey, look at it. These Darkstar skins all look the same. I don't like this Battle Academia, you know, like whatever. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nice shifting.
I think the designers care about clarity. But I will agree that I think it's become less emphasized. The clarity of champions in skins has become less and less emphasized.
It used to be like, oh, we want a really clean silhouette, so no matter the skin, you can at least recognize the shape. Yeah. But that's kind of gone out the window with a lot of things.
Even in splash arts and stuff, I find it difficult, and I freaking live and breathe this game.
Dude, the new fairy skins, I'm like, which one is, who is that?
I have to look at the captions on a lot of times. New skins are coming out to figure it out. And the only way that I can actually do it, and it just takes a second to look at, is you have to actually look for their like defining feature, which is almost always the weapon. Right, so you have to actually look at the weapons on the character,
like an animation.
Yeah, like so. There's like, well, I'm just talking about even splash arts.
Oh yeah,
right. On splash arts, you can usually tell by the weapon, but otherwise, it gets really hard to tell. And a lot of the champions, certain skins, it's hard to tell if it's placebo or not. But like, there, it definitely feels that certain skins are pay to win, right? With like harder to read animations and stuff like that. And I know a lot of players and even pros are like kind of bought in on that. And there's a reason why some skins are disabled in pro, because they do feel that they're harder to see. Even some like unintentional stuff. I don't know if you guys saw the like J4 flag and drag thing with the Fnatic skin, where it's like you could basically like hide that some of the animations.
I have that skin.
Yeah, there you go.
OG account, baby.
I need to see if I have it. I might. I mean, the visual clarity of Aurelion Sol doesn't bother me, but maybe it bothers other people.
Yeah. For me, it's just the play pattern. Yeah. I just find the play pattern very frustrating. Mm. It feels too difficult to punish him for how strong he gets later. And I think the more people play him in pro, we are going to get so bored of this champion, because it's just so non-interactive. I don't know.
It's interesting because it's been slow to pick up and get integrated into LPL or LCK.
Yep.
So I would be interested to see if it actually does make its way in, because it's already getting nerfs over there.
Yeah.
Just let me know. Give me the green flag whenever I can start talking about jungle experience changes. And
go in.
All right, wait.
There's a lot of them.
We got to complain about one more champ.
I'm
first.
Waiting for my flag.
The Yuumi. The Yuumi changes that came.
Oh, you want to go from him complaining to...
Let's get it out of the way.
Yuumi? Okay, here we go.
Let's get it out of the way. All right.
It's very frustrating because it felt like this breath of fresh air, this reprieve, this relief from Yuumi for a patch. And I was like, I don't have to ban Yuumi. I don't see Yuumi anywhere. If anyone hovers Yuumi, everyone in Champ Select is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Patch notes. Please don't pick that. And it was just, I really had a good couple weeks there. I don't know about you guys. It was a nice run. And then when it was announced she was coming back, I was a little trepidatious. I was like, okay, I guess here we go. It's going to be some big changes, maybe. I don't know how they're going to fix this frustrating issue with the core issue of the champion being frustrating, being its untargetability, but that also kind of being the identity of this champion you want it to be. They've specifically stated they wanted it to be an easy-to-access champion that you can bring your friends in with, and they won't have to worry about positioning. So I always knew that is going to be a really difficult problem to reconcile with untargetability being so strong. And how are you going to be able to actually make something like that without it being having abuse cases?
I think for me, like, the power level is one.
Right now it's abusive.
Yeah, right now the power level is like out of control. It had to get hot fix, of course. And like, you can, of course, keep tweaking these levers. I'm sure it's going to happen until she's out of pro play again, but that took forever. Maybe who knows what's going to happen. I think for me, on the design angle, like the problem with old Yuumi was like this identity where she's supposed to be this noob friendly champion, but she had a skill curve like Akali, people said, you know, like it just like was super, like she had super high mastery. And you can talk about skill floor versus skill ceiling, of course, but it didn't seem clear that like the skill floor was adequately good enough for new players to make it a worthwhile pick, while the skill ceiling just took off into like insane hyperscaling land. And they tried to fix that, but to me, I don't see how a lot of these changes actually make this easier for a new player to pick up. There's a little bit less hopping on and off. But one of the things I find, at least from talking to people who are new to these kinds of games, is the complexity of a lot of champions and what's going on in the game is just so high. You have no idea what's killing you. You don't know what's going on. And these are just massive tooltips with a lot of situational abilities. Depending on who you're on and how much friendship you've stacked and all these kinds of things, your abilities do different things.
The friendship thing is basically stay on the AD carry the whole game.
So the decision...
And you can go on to other people when you need to evade or you need a quick heal, and then...
I understand that. Not hard for me to wrap my brain around. You sit on the one person who you're going to be on, especially going to be your AD carry, because that's who you spend the laning phase with. But like for a new player... You're not going to really understand why when you press R on one champion, it's different than on the other and these kinds of things. And like you can sit on that one person, but when you press a button and it does different things in different situations, that's like one of the things that I know a lot of people that I've spoken to when they're starting the game, it's what they hate about some sort.
The tooltips are enormous.
And then even if you just want to learn through doing it, it does different things depending on who you're attached to and whatnot. And you're just going to get lost. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've seen people when they're like, oh, well, I hopped off my AD carry this one time and I jumped on my jungler and suddenly my abilities do different things. Like, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. And like that to me is, again, like, I don't know how this is targeting a new player experience versus something like, for example, Annie, it's like every button does what it does, and the one thing you need to know is if your stun is stacked, and that's about the only thing. Like, this is just still very complex to me. I don't see how this is a simply designed champion, even if to the point like you can tell them, "Hey, idiot, just sit on me and don't do anything." Mm-hmm. But like, that's still not that easy.
Yeah, and it seems like the majority of the changes were aimed at making it less offensive power, making it more defensive power. But then when I saw that, I personally don't feel like defensive power is less frustrating in a lot of cases when you are untargetable and then you're making the enemy hyper carry more defensive and more safe. That seems super frustrating as well. It's like I said, that this is a pretty hard, you know, design plus goal to be able to reconcile these two things. And it's going to need some more work.
I mean, I think they can make the champion balanced for sure. They can keep tweaking numbers until it is like a 50-ish% win rate. Like, they can for sure do that. But I don't know that they can make the champion not frustrating with this design goal. And that's one of the things that they'll have to like reconcile and just decide, like, are we okay with people just hating this champion, right? Because I don't think people are ever really going to stop hating it when it's untargetable, unless it is so unplayable that like you feel you're getting an advantage playing against it because it's so bad, right? And that's something that I know that they ran into with Tahm Kench and stuff as well. With Tahm Kench's old Devour on a basic ability, like there was a point where this was literally the lowest win rate champion in the game in every role, and it was still maintaining a 40-50% ban rate because people are so frustrated by the W.
And that's defensive power, right? And so like that can be some of the most frustrating in the game. While I fully agreed with reducing the no interaction, guess what? Yumi's on you. Now you have
your death cap.
The offensive power increase just to your stats. I was happy that they removed that, but then
Even like healing versus shielding, like shielding seems like a more situationally combat aware thing to have to do to shield at the right time versus like, oh, well, I'll use my heals at some point. Like a lot of these things, I just don't see how it flattens the skill curve. And maybe the data will come out and it does, but like the aiming of the Q seems more difficult. Like I where it now shoots off after a little bit versus just it always goes to your mouse. There's so many of these things where I'm like, I don't know what the effect of this will be. And, you know, it's a very difficult problem to solve. I think that's a good thing to highlight, where it's I don't know exactly all the teams at Riot, but like the design team is different than sometimes the balance team, which is different from like the mid-scope updates, I think, you know, like, and there's like a whole chain of command and like what is core to a design and what can you tweak and not, you know, like obviously the untargetability is something that they are working within like a paradigm.
Yeah. And I also want to add that we are all on the perspective of the anti-Yumis, because we are not the Yumi players, but Yumi has a really high player base also.
People love that champ.
Has a lot of Yumi mains, and I'm never going to...
And they should League of Legends because this champ sucks!
No, I'm never going to see the world through that window. Okay. All right. How is it jungle time?
Sure. All right, go for it, buddy.
We do a little jungle changes, and then we can go back into specific champion changes because there are a lot of specific champion changes in this patch that I think are really good. You know, both some of the buffs as well as some of the nerfs. But the jungle stuff, and I only played a few games when it first came out. I had some pretty big, like, paradigm-shifting life events this weekend, so I didn't play any this weekend. But these changes are some of the exact changes that I was hoping that we would actually get, namely removing the counter jungle debuff.
Let's go!
I'm so happy that they did this because one of the biggest things that people complain about was something that we had a check and balance system implemented from the beginning of League with junglers being able to counter you and be able to punish you if you go for a gank, then take multiple resources from your side of the map. And that increase in time combined with the durability increase that they did to camps previously, plus the lowering of the actual value out of those camps and shifting some of the value that you get as jungle into treats and passive income, all combined into this world where it was meaningless. And it set so many junglers kind of adrift. And anyways, that one is a super, super big change. Very, very good. I should go into some detail on the other experience change because this, the way that is worded in the patch, is fairly misleading. It used to be junglers, since this season, had a 75% total experience from lane minions. And so you just generically, all game long, you're getting less. It did not change. Now, it starts lower at 40% and it scales up to that same 75% at 14 minutes, but it is then fully removed. Which it doesn't, it's not very clear that this actually happens.
Oh, it does?
With how you read them. Yeah, exactly. Oh. With how you read the patch notes. But it's been tested multiple times. It is actually goes back to 100% after the 14 minutes.
Is that intended?
I was going to say
that. It is intended.
Huh.
I forget who it was. It was one of the like bug fixers or jungle mains, not Vandrill, but one of the others, directly asked the Riot designers and tested it multiple times, and this is how it is currently.
That's so weird, because it doesn't say that at all.
Exactly, it's very misleading. It says 40 up to 75% scaling up to the 14-minute marks, and then that's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's removed. So that does mean it opens the window for later game, you know, like split-pushing junglers, yeah. Or, you know, being able to quickly push out a lane and move to objectives, and it brings back, it feels like, some more choice. It does also combine with this goal that they have had of really nerfing as much sources of experience for ganking junglers, it feels like, in the early game as heavily as possible. I personally wasn't a big fan of when they went after champion kill experience because, to me, that's a little bit too tunnel vision on trying to nerf early game junglers, and you are not really... you also have this side effect of nerfing kill-oriented laners. And you increase the value of laners just looking for minions and passive laning, which I'm always very scared about because I don't want the game, for a viewer's spectator's point of view, to go back to farming is where more important and kills are not, because kills are exciting.
Yeah.
They're buffing in exchange. They're buffing a lot of assassin champions actually now, which they talked about for the next patch. Which could have its own problems of being frustrating if you go too far on these levers and you lower the value of getting kills, but then you are compensating those champions that relied on kills by increasing their ability to kill you, then you end up with a situation where nobody's happy because they're killing you and they're not getting as much reward, but you're still dying. And that feels like shit for you, right? Yeah. But they're getting better at killing you because their win rate's going down, and so they're just getting buffed for their ability to kill you. That could be an issue that arises and could be something that's on the horizon to keep your eyes out for. But that, especially that one about the laning experience, I think was pretty important. And then they just kind of across the board put more gold into each camp to also further incentivize and raise the value and the stakes on actually jungling, which I do like. Camps meaning more means there is more
emphasis on quote unquote good jungling or historically good jungling and paying attention to camps and lane states and adds to me too, you know, more kind of objectives and point to the game.
I haven't played too much Summoner's Rift this year, but one of the games I played, enemy team Lee Sin just like set up a camp top lane pretty early on through for after his first clear. I went into his bot side jungle and I was like, wow, this feels miserable to counter jungle now. It just took me forever to clear the camps. Couldn't leave the little wolf up to like try and punish him in case
they auto clear themselves.
Yeah.
It was actually terrible. And then people are used to, even my laners, if they got ganked on bottom side and I cleared up toward the top side, they start pinging enemy crugs.
That's what happened to me. They ping me.
Because they think, and everyone's conditioned to think like, they're mad. Get something back. Punish this guy. And you're sitting there. I don't have time to type out the entire patch notes and be like, hey, man, so actually, it's actually not worth it now. You know, it takes as long to kill crugs for me
and it takes
as
longer.
It did for that for this guy to come down and kill you. So it's better for me.
It was one of those things where once I experienced it once, I was like, yep, counter jungling. It's like a three-pronged approach to me between ganking, farming, and counter jungling. And they just like took out one of those prongs, which I think also is something that makes ganking just feel better because it's just imbalanced a little bit now.
It just felt like all you wanted to do was like get your double buffs, get level three, and just like walk to lanes over and over.
Right? You didn't have anything else to do.
When you have nothing else to do, then you go back and farm. And I mean, it's also, there's been so much talk about these weird experience differences and stuff. And I see screenshots on Twitter all the time of like a jungler doubling the other guy's farm or whatever and having a bunch more kills and the other guy's the same level of them. Because it does seem like there's some weird stuff going on with catch-up XP. Mm. And like, it seems like if you get like a shutdown kill, then you get massively slingshot with XP and stuff.
Yeah, so that specific one was the champion kill experience shutdown was hit in the last patch was one of the things that I was mentioning. There was also now you used to get a bunch of bonus experience for just being one level behind. Now you have to be two levels behind the person that you kill and it's less.
Yep. And you get less from lanes and stuff. So there should be more of a risk versus reward instead of what it felt like a couple patches ago, which was just like, you're actually just dumb if you're not ganking. Mm-hmm. So I like that, right? Like I do think that is what makes jungle interesting is when, you know, you are taking the risk of going for this gank. And if you can execute properly, then you're heavily rewarded. Mm-hmm. But if you fail, then your opponent is going to create an advantage, right? Through this more kind of like consistent style of farming or whatever. So I think it's good. I'm glad to see some of those changes coming through.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried that they're going to end up being so many paragraphs of specific experience circumstances that new junglers have to read now, though. Because I know one of the goals in the beginning was make this way easier for newbie junglers and autofill junglers. And now there are different experience conditions for all different sources of experience.
Yeah.
Depending on what position you play.
It gets confusing. It gets really confusing for sure.
I mean, obviously, I'm super dedicated, and so I kind of like, but that's not going to be a
problem. Yeah. All right, ready to move into some of the more general champion things? Sure. For me, the patch targeted a lot of AD carry stuff. Continuing to see slight tweaks, buffs, and nerfs to some of them. I don't have super strong feelings on any of them in particular, other than Ashe changes a little bit because she is highest presence, or she was at least, champion in the game.
Yeah. They didn't nerf Hawkshot, but since they nerfed Ashe and there will be less Ashes, I'm still happy.
You just take that. Yeah, there's also the Azir like mini rework. I don't know what you would call this. Like small update to base stats, QWE, passive, everything kind of got touched a little bit.
This is more of the effort to shift its power all the way from like elite, like pro tier, right? Because Azir has just been this champion that perennially is overpowered in pro and complete garbage in solo queue. So they're in this like weird catch 22 where it's like, it's actually a terrible champion for the majority of the player base, but they feel that they can't buff it because it's still overpowered in pro. So they've been trying to do more and more of these changes that are making it worse for pro, so that they are given room to buff it for solo queue. So your average Azir player can actually play this and not just be griefing their team.
Yeah, I think one of the big ones is like the attack speed changes on the W, because that's something where like, Azir is very clunky the first time you play him, like getting your attacks in those little circles and not walking forward and like all that kind of stuff. The more you make people have to right click on the champion, the more difficult it gets to pick up at the beginning. So they've changed a lot of the damage and play pattern to be less attack speed oriented, with like the soldiers not giving attack speed, not getting a bonus when there's three of them, and just giving more magic damage on it. So like you can probably calc it out to be roughly the same DPS, but it's a lot less skill requirements out of the player to get that DPS.
So something I'm kind of interested in, the changes aren't actually that big, but Rumble, I've been seeing a lot more Rumble in solo queue and stuff recently, and even in like a lot of challenger games and whatnot that I've been watching. I don't know if any of you guys ever watched Lorlo, but he's in Europe right now doing like a unranked challenger type thing, and he's playing a lot of Rumble, and it was looking pretty good even pre-patch. The patch changes aren't massive, but it's one of these things where like I've been feeling like Rumble could situationally get some play for a while now, and sometimes these changes just at least make people reconsider the champion again and try it out a little bit. They are just basically like they've increased the magic shred on harpoons. So instead of it being flat, it like scales up. So if you get multiple harpoon hits, you have more shred. So it can actually be pretty effective, especially with flat bend. You can get towards, you know, like really, really low levels of MR if you can double tag with the E. But I think he has like quite a few strong matchups. I think he can be played mid and top. And Rumble with Ignite is actually like really terrifying in some of these bad matchups. Like I know in particular, as far as like common solo queue picks, it's really, really strong against Aatrox. It can do very, very well against Gnar. Like some of these types of picks can really struggle against it. Also really good against, you know, like some of the mid laners that are somewhat more niche, but like things like Ryze and Aurelia and whatnot, at least in solo queue, it seems to do really, really well.
Yeah, I think as far as pro play goes and the AD carry changes, the Zaya nerf is definitely good and necessary and needed. The Jinx buff, I think, is going to really slingshot Jinx ahead. So I feel like we are going to get bottom lane changeups here from this patch, 3.5. At the very least, Jinx will get played. Caitlyn and Zaya both deserved nerfs. Twitch deserved some nerfs as well, even though
AP nerf.
It's definitely the roaming AP Twitch annoying factor that everybody has dealt with. But I think those are pretty interesting. And then the only other ones really that we haven't touched on are the ones I kind of talked about in jungle changes, where they're compensating some of these assassin mids, which were the collateral damage of the attempts at nerfing early game
LeBlanc,
junglers.
LeBlanc, Qiyana, both got Enfys.
Yeah, where their win rates went down because they were ones that roamed around and got kill experience that way. And so while their power of that individual champion did not go down, their win rate did go down. And so now they're getting compensation buffs, which is all focused on win rate. And I'm very curious to see how this turns out, because I mean, personally, when I get my autofill mids, like I said, are always Talon and Katarina. Fizz, I always love playing it, but it was just so hard to get through early lanes because you're mana restricted as all hell. And you'd just be, if they picked some harassment matchup and they had jungle pressure early, you're just at the whim of your own jungle trying to help you through early lane phase. Now I feel like if he can do that, it can be a very oppressive solo queue champion and might even make its way into pro play with the power of, again, another source of untargetability on his E. Very interesting. Qiyana has always been one of the assassins that does creep her way into pro play if it's viable.
Rumble,
so
Qiyana.
I'm curious Rumble, to watch Qiyana. That. Yeah, we could get the clutch special.
Yeah.
The Rumble Qiyana combination as well. LeBlanc's already getting played, so yeah, LeBlanc's gonna get played more. Great. JoJo's happy. MNS is happy. The
LeBlanc changes are kind of interesting too, because they're like buffing an assassin by just making the laning easier, essentially, right? Instead of, and I think that's like a less frustrating part of it, instead of just like making the Q do more damage, you get one shot. They're basically giving LeBlanc like the Annie treatment, where if you kill a minion with your Q, you get the mana back and you get part of the cooldown back. Yeah. And then it also does bonus damage on minions. So it's going to be easier to actually, you know, clear out minions, the last hit minions with the Q and whatnot. I don't know like how much of a difference it's going to make, because in pro play, generally people want to save that for trading, but it's going to help you push faster and stuff.
And Tryndamere is another one in this LeBlanc bucket that's already getting played.
Yep.
And this is going to be nerfs. Better. It's going to be played
small
more.
Buffs, yep.
Good for people like me who, under the turret with LeBlanc, you're like, cute. Your auto attacks you like 45. You know, you're 50. You're like, all right. I think, unless there's something else you guys want to touch on, patch. All right. We're going to move ahead to the LCX section. This one's going to be beefy as we head into the final week of the regular season. Week 8, Super Week, starting this Wednesday. If you missed it, 3 games for each opponent. as we come in on a pretty tight playoff race in a couple of different positions. There's, of course, the tie right now at the top between C9 and FlyQuest at 12-3. There's about a four-team playoff race, maybe three, depending on when you look at Team Liquid's opponents and the fact that they're a game down. But there's three teams at 7 and 8 tied for fifth, and then Team Liquid one game behind. So pretty interesting weekend. I guess we can start at the top of the table.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's worth talking about FlyQuest a little bit, just because this is a team that obviously has been at like first place or now tied for first place basically the entire split, but has been looking, I think, a lot weaker and showing some more holes over these last couple of weeks. And it's interesting because we are now coming up on this final week. They did win their last game against Immortals, but they're coming off of back-to-back losses to TL as well as EG. And I think people are starting to maybe finally get a little bit more honest about some of the mistakes that they had been seeing from FlyQuest in the past. I felt like people were kind of papering over some of issues in the mid lane from Vikla and kind of just ignoring them. Even in the early weeks, I know I had talked about it a little bit and caught some flack from people, you know, because a lot of people I think had Vikla as kind of like the best mid in the league. But he has now had quite a few games that were kind of like monster int games, and some of them are resulting in losses now, right? And their first place seed is at risk.
Yeah, I brought it up on this or that as well because we had a slide on it, and it is one of those things where it's suspect and is kind of glossed over because they're getting wins and now is getting that microscope. But as well, Prince even had a really bad game on Lucian. So, and if you listen to the interviews from the players, even weeks ago, when some of the other teammates were talking about Vikla, they were talking about wanting to increase his confidence and wanting to help him in various ways. So it is interesting that you're getting so much flack for that kind of criticism at Vikla when other people are also seeing it. And when even his own teammates are talking about trying to build him up for kind of obvious reasons for some of those games as well. With the most recent interview with Speaker talking a lot about communication as well, I've got to think that there might be Winsome coming back. You know, the bottom lane change has not worked out. I feel really bad for Ayla because he was stuck in, you know, visa hell, didn't get to be here. The team is progressing without you. They start really strong. They're winning all their games on stage. The other teams are talking about how in scrims, they're not that great, but they're just winning on stage all the time. And so you just see this kind of passing you by. And then by the time you get here, then there's this shift. Teams have had more time to analyze the playstyle. They haven't changed as much. Now there's some bottom lane errors even coming out, and Prince, who has looked amazing, there's this Lucian game that is terrible. And while it is unfair circumstances, I feel like, you know, the world is not a fair place, and it feels pretty rough, and the discussion has, you know, come up in a couple of places about the, you know, possibility of bringing him back, especially with, you know, the focus of team play and them talking about some of the changes in the last few weeks on the internal side.
I feel like if there's any saving grace for him, it's what you talked about. Like, the scrims have not always been as good as the result on stage, the first round robin. So if there's a case where, like, they were struggling with Winsome a little bit in scrims, and they internally can see that there's not like that difference. Maybe it's just things that had always been on the team manifesting more on stage. Mm-hmm. Like, they will have more data to make this decision, because from the outside looking in, it does feel like, well, you're winning a lot more with Winsome and you look better. So
exactly.
It's hard on the outside to not be like, okay, heading into playoffs, you should probably put the guy in who you won more with. Yeah. But like, you know, internally the team might be like, all right, well, we actually like playing with Ayla more. This feels like a stronger team because we were having all these problems that just weren't showing up before.
Fortunately for them, they're at the top because they won so much with Winsome. And so they can afford to take the long-term stance. They don't have to do a knee-jerk reaction. Oh man, we might not make playoffs. We better put Winsome back in. If they think that they do have better end game, long-term team with Ayla in, then they might as well ride out the bumps, make your improvements as this team, and not kind of revert, because they won all their you know, they won enough to secure their spot.
How are you guys feeling about Prince then? Like, do you think that the issues are more like, ah, it's like an Ayla thing? Or do you think Prince is being like figured out a little bit, or it just isn't performing as well individually? Because I know you did an interview with Sven, I believe it was, right? And you're asking him, oh, like, who's the MVP that's not you, not like one from your team, one from someone else? And he even was like, oh, well, not Prince, because Prince, you know, he was playing well in the first half, but he's playing not so good in the second half. Like, you know, he mentioned Spica, and he was saying Spica is the cause of like all their good plays, and Prince isn't actually playing that well anymore. And I found that interesting, because that's the first time I had really heard pros publicly kind of like fire a little shot, maybe.
I had heard it before. I don't remember who was talking about it during the first round robin when they were winning a lot. I think it even might have been Sven on the dive talking about how, like, well, is he really doing anything? Or is it like his team just goes late game?
It
and
was,
then, like,
was Sven. Sven yeah, fires a lot of these shots.
Yeah, he's consistent, though. He's never believed in Golden Guardians, and he's always thought Prince is overrated. But yeah, there was some chirping, I guess, about from him at least before as well, about how, like, you know, he's on a really good team. He's playing AD carry.
Yeah.
He also did give him credit for the games that deserve credit. He was just like, in some of these games, even if you are Omega superstar, you didn't have to do anything.
You're just cleaning up.
That was one of the points. And I thought that, like, that's a really fair way of doing it.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to just FlyQuest, their hot start too. One of the reasons I think people might have papered over some of their potential problems was because there wasn't a clear ballpark, like, no one else was close to them really through some of the first round robin, whereas, like, yeah, this isn't super clean, but like EG's kind of running it down, and like people weren't super convinced on C9 quite yet. It didn't feel like there was anyone else in the conversation for another best team, so like maybe that's why people were not as quick to hop on, because it's like, well, if you're going to criticize that about them, but look at the rest of the league over here, kind of thing. So it's cool that the C9 has kind of risen up to contest them. I think people still have a lot of hopes for EG. It just feels like there's been a lot of things bothering them, like the situation where JoJo wasn't playing, and then they have to sub Ryoma, and like I think they're a team that's stronger than their record too.
You got me with the little dangly piece of Cloud9. Now I'm getting all excited.
All right, real quick before we go to Cloud9.
Yeah.
FlyQuest opponents this weekend: C9, Golden Guardians, and TSM. Obviously, we're going to talk about C9, but I think it's interesting that FlyQuest plays potentially three playoff-bound teams in a row to end their split. They could end with some struggle.
How many holes do they have? Is it Swiss cheese?
Two and one, or a couple stray? 1-2 or 3-0?
I feel like it's 2-1. I mean, I think that they're still a really good team. I just think that they're not this perfect team that some people, I felt like, were kind of making them out to be. And, you know, especially as Cloud9 has risen up and got MNS in there, I feel like Cloud9 to me looks like the clear best team right now. So like I am kind of looking at that as like a bit of an expected loss. Maybe FlyQuest will really surprise me, but I definitely think Golden Guardians and TSM are absolutely doable, and I'm still kind of expecting them to finish top two. It's just interesting because from most of the people that I talk to, as far as scrim stuff goes, basically every pro I've talked to has EG rated higher than FlyQuest. Mm-hmm. And so if FlyQuest finishes second and EG finishes third, that could be their first round opponent. And then after this like pretty amazing split, potentially a really tough
losing
opponent
first
for them.
Round robin.
Yeah, potentially, you know, buster out in first round, but they'd obviously have lower bracket.
Yeah. I'm probably in the 2-1 train, but I wouldn't be shocked if they went 1-2 this weekend. And even picking up a single win is enough to kind of keep them ahead of EG, I think. No, they're 1-1, so they might have to play a tiebreaker.
Depends how EG does, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think they're got some things to fix. All right, go ahead, C9. You're unleashed, sir.
Wait, I didn't get to add my two points on the FlyQuest. Okay. I feel pretty solid, actually, with FlyQuest, mainly because I feel like Impact always kind of ramps up for playoffs. Mm-hmm. And he has done so many interviews talking about how his number one goal with this team is to not let them relax and make sure that they want to be the very best, not just in North America, but also for international play. And I feel like this is the time where Impact is going to crack the whip and refocus everybody. And as far as Prince goes, I still think Prince of Berserker basically for me is
best two.
Best two ADKs for sure.
Fixate hater.
You're week by week. Yep. Yeah, that's true. the week by week, you can argue which one's, you know, one and which one's two. But Prince also, one of the things, because I've followed every single player's Twitch to be able to watch them if they ever want to stream, and so I can try and help promote them too and build up brands. But he always gets right back in there trying to grind. And he will also tell you if, hey, I'm not going to stream today, it's got to be an off stream day because I was so rough. I need to focus. And it just, he really does have that grind mindset. So I'm super excited to see what this week looks like for FlyQuest because it's going to be very telling.
Yep.
And I personally think that it's going to be a strong answer from them heading towards playoffs. I would bet, if I had to bet, that they do lose the game to Cloud9, but I would not bet anything lower than a 2-1
so
week.
2-1, but
I would not bet anything lower than it, though, you know, as far as you guys could see, like a 1-2. I think it's for sure at least a 2-1 or a 3-0.
Okay. So but you're pretty optimistic.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic. That might be erroneous, and maybe some of this question of, you know, which support plays or, you know, how that is going, and maybe confidence of the bottom lane working together, and the communication things that Speaker reference are pretty worrying. But
I mean, I think if they get 2 wins, people are going to feel relatively confident. If they get 3 wins, it's going to be full
back to the hype train.
Yeah. Idiot.
Those were just, you know, unlucky games. But if they only get 1 win or 0 wins, I think everyone's betting against them in the first round of playoffs, right? Mm. That's going to be like a lot of doubters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Cloud9, MNS has looked amazing for them. He actually just won Player of the Week. I will admit I voted for Closer. I thought Closer should have maybe got it. Both of them, I think, had incredible weeks. Mm-hmm. But MNS has been such a difference maker for the team. And it's been really fun because I've been enjoying some of these guys. He's been the one that's had the most success. But some of these guys that are coming in and playing a different style and playing their own kind of unique set of champions, you know, Bolulu as well. But he has been able to do this and just like string off all these wins with Cloud9 and be a huge part of them. It's just fun to see, right? We got Tryndamere, we got Yone, we got two LeBlanc games, we got the Syndra game. Like, you know, he's playing very much stuff that is like MNS style, and really being successful with it. I think the big question for me is just, you know, if playoffs meta or whatever meta is pushed towards just like, you know, a zero victor every game type thing, remains to be seen, like how is he going to be in that style. But thus far, he's been able to have great picks and maintain his aggressiveness.
Piz buffs, Qiyana buffs. I want to see some MNS on some of these like really mobile assassins. That to me sounds very exciting. And I know that community sentiment and narrative is all going to be on the side of Cloud9 because it's the opposite of FlyQuest, where FlyQuest start out with a bunch of wins. That was early in the season. And then they make this roster change and they get worse, seemingly.
Yep.
Cloud9, opposite story.
Make a roster change.
Boom. We're better.
All your games.
It's Megatron. Actually, that's not a good reference. He's the bad guy.
you need like Voltron.
Yeah.
They come together.
The last piece for Voltron. And so it just seems like Cloud9 are going to have so much confidence that they're kind of snowballing at the right time. So, and I'm bought in as well. I have, you know, supreme confidence with them and FlyQuest at the very top.
Yeah, I think their triple threat team feels like anyone can carry, even Blabber. And it's just going to get better with the jungle change.
Well, that's meant by even Blabber.
Yeah. Well, I just mean like given the current meta,
that he might be my MVP vote.
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to fight with everything I have. I hope he sucks this weekend. Junglers so don't need another MVP.
Wait, so if they're only a triple threat, including Blabber, who's the one that's not a threat?
Zven.
Wait. So Zven.
There's
and
five people.
There's five people. On
you
the
said
team.
Who's the one?
So there you go. Who's the carry?
Well, I was saying before, I don't really think jungle was like an insane carry position. Like people weren't spamming.
So you weren't counting.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, like it was more of a meta point that like jungle was not carry oriented really. People were playing nocturnes and like there's the Graves games from Kenvi and whatnot. Like they're
I mean, junglers carry by getting their laners ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Like even the closer games was like, all right, I gank like five times, I got kills all over, and like go team, I've set you up. And that's Blabber was obviously doing that very well, but. Yeah, I think with maybe some of the jungle changes of having more counter jungling, more golden experience that like they can then just be like, I made the comparison on the analyst desk, but like IG a little bit in 2018, you know, where it's like you just have an insane jungle with three carries in every lane. You're like, all right, we're just going to dominate.
Kill everyone everywhere all the time.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of have that energy to me.
Yeah. Blabber already had the lowest jungle proximity, which is time close to your teammates. And so generally when you have a low jungle proximity number, that means you are farming more, which he does, and very efficiently. There's now more gold in the camps. That's going to benefit him. He's also one
it's going to hurt the team because he's going to be there even less now.
He also has the highest counter jungling percentage even before they removed the counter jungling diva. Yep. He was one of the only junglers that was still doing that.
I love their level ones, actually.
To an effective amount. So a lot of these 3.5 changes are actually pro Blabber, for sure.
What do you guys think about the discussion with MNS and All-Pro? So assuming Cloud9 has a 3-0 week.
Not enough time.
It's 9 games that he's played, so you just don't think he can even be considered.
I think he can be considered, but you get hurt by the All-Pro is for
the whole split.
So you, it's interesting to me because this question of recency bias always comes up, and yes, that is something you have to account for, but I also think it's fair to, while I still value the early season, I value it less. So it's not like it's taking you fully out of condition, out of, you know, the conversation.
Detention. Yeah.
But you do have some weight on it.
Yeah, I feel like recency bias is okay with the expectation that everyone should be getting better over the course of the split. So like if someone tanks in the back half of the split, you know, and they had a great first half, to me that I do weight the back half a little bit more because that's just like you should be going and getting better. But for just missing a whole first half of the split, it's hard for me to be like, it's not a skill ranking for me. It's like, what have you done on the Rift on game day kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's always how I kind of frame it in my head. And so to just be like, did not participate for half the season, it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, I will say it does help that he's been the best mid laner by, I think, a good margin since he's been back. I think JoJo, until this last weekend where he was sick, had done a lot better in the second round robin as opposed to the first. Vikla's had to come down, like we talked about. Like, I think given that there's not a clear number one, I would say that it does maybe give him a little bit more wiggle room into it. I'm not like 100% opposed to him being in, but I generally try to weight the people who were there. Because, like, you don't know. Maybe if he played the first round robin, he actually sucked as he acclimated to North America or something, and then he turns on the back. Like, you don't know what his arc would have been. And I think people just assume if they weren't there, it would have been that the whole time, and you don't know that actually.
Yeah, it's interesting because you also have to balance. So JoJo, I would consider this last weekend, he was out. He was sick.
Yeah.
So they eventually, you know, he technically played the first game from home, but he was so sick, like, he was not there. So I'm like, like, MNS was not there for a long time in the beginning. JoJo's another contender for, you know, best in mid, and he had a very critical timing as far as it being late in the season, you know, but he also missed some time. I think Gory is definitely very much up there as well.
Maple
definitely very much up there as well. So
it's, I think mid lane is going to be a really contentious vote.
I feel
because I think that there's going to be a portion of people who are just like, MNS is the best mid laner in the league. Yeah. First team All Pro. There's going to be a good portion of people who are kind of like, what you guys are saying, hey, he didn't play enough games. It's hard to make the argument that he would have maintained that low performance the whole split. So hard to vote for that. Then there's going to be, I think, you know, a section of people who are just like, yeah, FlyQuest is the best, you know, best team or one of the best teams. Sure, Vikla's up there. There's going to be the people who are like Vikla haters. There's JoJo people who are like, JoJo had some amazing games. You know, he got player of the week.
He's got
like,
his
he's
haters.
Also had a bunch of in games. Like him and Vikla, I think, are somewhat similar in that. Maybe JoJo has had more mistakes. I would have to go and look through it, but similar kind of storylines. And then there's Maple, who people talk about like very little. There's Gory, who, you know, who's having you know, quietly, like, I think a very good season. So it's interesting, right? I think that this could be very contentious, and it could be one of those where it's not just like a runaway vote like they normally are, where usually the top two, top three get like 80% of the votes. This could actually be one I could see where it's like 5-6 people are almost equal among votes.
And then everybody's going to have something they can be outraged out about afterwards.
Perfect.
You know, because perfect. Everyone you can be on the side where you're like, MNS didn't play games at the beginning of the season. JoJo was inting. No, JoJo was sick. It's not his fault. No, blah. Like, there's definitely going to be, good times. A lot of community conversation I can feel after this one.
So C9 has FlyQuest, IMT, and CLG as their last three games. It's just based on how they've been playing. I mean, they're on a 5-game winning streak right now. It feels like a 3-0 to me. I feel like they're looking like the best team in the league right now. I feel like CLG is on a downward trend, FlyQuest on a downward trend, and Immortals has just been struggling, even though I think, even in their loss, I think they've been looking better with Bolulu. They've looked like they've had, you know, opportunities to win. I just feel like C9 is coming in as heavy favorites to claim the first seed.
Yep, I'm pretty much on board.
So far, if we're going top down, I think we have, for feel, Cloud9 being number one, FlyQuest probably finishing number two.
Yeah,
let's keep going.
Yeah, so EG right now is 10 and 5. Even though they may finish below FlyQuest, a lot of people are starting to talk about, oh, maybe this team is actually better, you know, based on scrims. And Sven gave an interview, I know, as well, on stage, where he was kind of pointing out they were the one team that they were scared of. He's like, even if we were going to meet them in the finals, they would be the team we want to dodge. So, you know, people still giving a lot of respect over to EG. But has to be said, EG has not been having a very clean split at all, right? Like, it's not just like the JoJo games, and there have been some silly JoJo games, more than just the one where he was sick. Like, this one, I'm willing to give him a pass. He has COVID. He's obviously very sick. It could be rough. But he's had a lot of games where he's got caught in side lanes and had silly things happen, and EG have thrown a number of games. They haven't looked as consistent overall. And I think, you know, FBI, not that I like it's a fair expectation, but he hasn't been able to like live up to, I think, what Danny was for them in summer split, right? Like, he just hasn't hit that level. So I don't think the team is clicking in the same way that people maybe were hoping for.
Producer's note, Inspired has said publicly that they have put a little less weight into the regular season. I mean, that's, I think, the copium angle for anyone who's an EG fan is like they went 9-9 in spring last year, won. And
I hate the spring comparisons.
You hate it?
Can I
try and shoot it down.
Okay, so I've almost got to stop you because people are saying, oh, it's not a fair comparison because, you know, with JoJo and Danny, Impact went 9-9 in spring with them. It's like that was their first split ever. This is now a team where, yeah, they changed out some players, but everyone, like the core of the team has been playing together for a while now, for over a year, had all the MSI experience, had the entire spring split run where they won, then had a long and absolutely dominant summer split, then got to go to Worlds and have that experience. So it's like, just because it's spring of this year, it's not fair to compare it to spring of last year, because JoJo is a different player. You know, like Vulcan, Inspired, and JoJo are the core of this team and have played together for a full year now. So I just think that like the spring to spring comparisons are totally fraudulent when comparing like, oh, Someday's doing just as well as Impact did, and FBI is doing just as well as Danny did, because that's how they did in spring. No.
So here's the counterpoint, you hater. There's plenty of teams who have a couple roster changes, struggle in the regular season, and turn it on playoffs. C9 last summer, TSM in 2020.
They totally could, but that doesn't make it a good argument.
No, I'm just saying it's copium. I said, I straight up said it's copium. Yeah. This is what copium is it's like something where like, well, it's not great right now, but this could happen. And I think that is very true for this team, where everyone's saying they're incredible in spring. Or in scrim, excuse me. You can see that they have the carry potential in the games where they absolutely smurf on kids. Like the FlyQuest game was not close. Yep. When they beat them, it wasn't like this hard fought battle. It was like good night. And I think the championship level that we've seen these players get to before makes it very believable. I think that they are an experienced team, and in some sense, like, you know, Impact sometimes goes to bed in the regular season. It feels like, I think, for some, like someone like Inspired, he's young, of course, but he's also, God, my computer just shut off. He's been to so many international events. He's won a bunch of championships. You know, like I can see the regular season getting a little monotonous to him after being on the top of multiple regions for so long. Like, I don't think it excuses some of the mistakes you've seen, that they are real, but also it does speak to like, well, if they turn it on in playoffs, there's no reason this team can't be lifting a trophy. So I wouldn't put them the favorites, but I think that's the copium angle, is like, this team can still easily win a title.
Yeah. And whenever teams try and pitch that to me, I say, okay, but you're turning it back on is not instant. And so that's why I have to see it this week. If they haven't already flipped that switch and been like, yo, you know, shape up right now, everyone, then I will be very, very skeptical that they can actually do that at playoffs being the starting point, especially since the team got COVID. And so now they're also dealing with sickness. So they're like, hey, turn it on now. And they're like, oh, we're sick.
And I don't know like how bad they have it. Because I know a lot of people, like, I know when you said you got COVID before, you barely felt like anything. Yeah. For me, I literally felt like I lost like 50 IQ for a month or two. I had crazy brain fog. It was really hard. I was losing my train of thought constantly. Mm-hmm. Even after I was no longer sick, I just felt like even playing video games was really hard. I was literally like forgetting my key bindings while I'm playing games mid-game and stuff. So it's like there's varying degrees. Mm-hmm. They could have crazy brain fog and that could really be hard. JoJo, like, I'm not trying to be an EG hater because I actually do believe in the team. I just hate the like spring-to-spring comparison as like, oh, it's just the same. So this means they're going to win in this year in spring. JoJo, I think, is getting more criticism than is deserved. He's had a lot of really like kind of boneheaded plays, and I think that's why they kind of stand out. And I feel like as a result, people haven't been talking about how good his laning phase is, because I still think he's by far the best mid laner in lane in the league right now, right? Like he's like more than double what the second highest CSD is at 10, right? He's plus 8 at 10. Second best in the league is Vikla at 3.9, right? So I still think, you know, he has some incredible strengths, and I do think that EG have a really strong early game. I think they absolutely can run you over, and the fact that everyone has been talking about how scary this team is in scrims all year long does give me faith that they can do well, especially with the bit of the FlyQuest downturn. So I do believe that EG can turn it up in playoffs, but I do want to see them showcase a bit of consistency, because I could also see a world in which they show up in a BO5 and they blow out a team in the early game and then throw the game, and it happens a couple times in a series, and all of a sudden maybe you were the better team but you lost the best of five.
The nice thing for them this weekend is it's not too difficult. Immortals, 100 Thieves, Team Liquid. 100 Thieves and Team Liquid are like...
100 Thieves look kind of pissed. I know people are trying to couch this comeback because of the opponents, but they do look focused. So yeah, that, I feel like that could be...
Yeah, these aren't like super easy games, but at least it's not against a C9 or a Fly or even a Golden Guardians, where, you know, FlyQuest has C9, Golden Guardians, CSM. Clearly, EG don't have the most difficult strength of schedule of the teams around them. But yeah, they still have to kind of show up that they are playing well against 100 Thieves and TL, because even TL beat FlyQuest. So, like, TL on a good day, who knows? We'll get to them in a little bit. But yeah, I think they should go 3-0. And put a little bit of pressure on FlyQuest to actually keep playing well.
Yeah, I would want to see them go 3-0-2 in a clean manner. The manner in which they get wins, because remember some of their wins at the beginning of this season too, were like, you're kind of drunk, you know, you're a little loopy, and then they end up, oh, okay, focus back up and we win. That was some of those JoJo games where people are like laughing, ha ha ha.
Even in their mic checks that they aired, you know, they would like win the game, they'd be like, dude, I don't know what happened. And it's not just JoJo, the whole team's like, I don't know what I was doing, but we won.
Well, in the VOD review thing, I remember that JoJo did. He's like, well, we were completely screwed unless they entered here and overpushed, and then they did, so we killed them. We won, you know, like, yeah. There's definitely some games that were a little suspect. I think if EG has a clean weekend, if they have a 3-0 weekend, I start to really believe in their championship aspirations. And I think, you know, if they can pull off that 3-0 weekend, then I would probably have them in my mind like above FlyQuest going into as far as like actual power. So
that scrim power is really swaying you.
The scrim bucks definitely, I think, are worth something here, because I've heard it from so many different angles that EG is really good in scrims. Plus, I just have a lot of faith in the individuals. Like, I know there's some really, really strong players. And Inspired, I think he's been talked about less this split, but I still think Inspired has been pretty incredible throughout the split. And I just think that guy is so damn good. And when JoJo is playing clean, I do think his early game is so strong. Vulcan, I think, is one of, you know, if not the best support in the league. So I have a lot of faith that this team can get it together.
I actually love going on the roller coaster of getting sucked into scrim rumors over and over again, and then whenever it blows up and fails, we're like, ah, damn you, scrim rumors again.
It's just
you
like gambling,
but
just,
then you're just jumping right back in.
You're just gambling on scrim bucks. You're like, oh yeah, there's a 50% chance this team's good.
It's fun.
I'm in.
And then when it works out, like, and your prediction is right, I'm never like, yeah, credit all the credits to these scrim rumors. I'm like, I'm a goddamn.
This is
genius.
Random it speculation was, yeah, that smart. Was true.
So it's either like, damn those stupid scrim bucks, like those rumors, it's not my fault, or I knew it all.
Either you're brilliant or unlucky.
Yeah,
it's one or the other. All right, Golden Guardians in fourth place. They're 9-6 right now, so they're one game off what would be their franchise record. This has never been an org that has finished above 9-9, so that would be big for them if they can even just get that one win. That would be a nice benchmark for the team, and it already feels like this is the most competitive team. Most competitive roster I think Golden Guardians has potentially ever fielded. They're looking, you know, really, really good. And the players definitely believe a lot. You know, we had Lickers and 6A on. They were talking about their belief that they can actually win the league, that they can go to MSI.
I'm not as sold as they are on themselves. I think that makes sense. But I definitely agree it's the best team of theirs that we've seen. I fully expect them to get that record this weekend.
Yep.
And I think they've come back down to earth a little bit with the TL loss as well as the 100 Thieves loss over the last two weekends. You know, they did beat Immortals and TSM, but like, it just felt like there was like this push of like, they're the hottest team in the league. Could they be the best? And it's, I don't know. There's Sven.
The narrative wave.
Yeah, you're like, how seriously should I treat this narrative wave?
Mm-hmm. They won 7 in a row, then they went 2-2, yeah. Basically.
Well, and the crazy thing was they beat C9 and EG just the week before that. Yeah, they beat yep. C9 and EG, and then that's when I think it did take some hold. It wasn't like it just came out of nowhere and it was pure like mm-hmm. win streak without looking at opponents. They were actually beating good teams. They were doing so relatively convincingly. So I think that they do have that legitimacy to them, but I think I'm a little bit with Sven where there's like tiers and they are just outside that kind of top three conversation as like a dark horse to win the split, but not someone I would bet on currently. I think Styx and Gory are legitimately good threats with good firepower. River has good early game, same with Huhi moving around the map. Licorice is like kind of that weak side top laner and he knows his role, but like it just, I don't know why it doesn't seem to, like it makes a lot of sense in my head how this team plays and they're good, but like I just don't.
I think part of the reason is that people desperately want to profile this team and put them in a box because for so long they have been a bad team, a lower half team, and have been the butt of a lot of jokes. And so they're suffering a lot in these sways of best of one sentiment where after their 100 Thieves game, even me, who I was pretty strong on them, I was like, oh, shit. It's over. That was the run. Like they got demolished by 100 Thieves, who had been looking dog doo doo themselves.
1-7, yeah, yeah, something.
So that one was like, that one was almost a sky is falling, it's all come crashing down moment. And then they saved it in the second game against TSM, where they then had this really strong comp, and they just crushed TSM. And kind of brought it back to even keel for me. So it's definitely a team that plays with people's hearts because, you want to, it's natural human nature to want to be able to profile things that you know and are comfortable and put them into those boxes. And so it's pretty hard to truly break out of those and get full commitment, especially if you have mixed results like this. And in best of ones, man, it looks so swingy.
Yeah.
Getting crushed like that by a team that has not been doing well.
After beating C9 and EG, who were like, ooh, maybe they're the two best teams in the league.
Yeah.
Do you think part of the problem, Mark, is just that you've had so many years of like the established, oh, Styx A is like a bottom guy and Lakers is a bottom guy and like these players aren't that good? Do you think it is almost trying to like break your preconceived notions about how strong the players are?
I don't. So it's maybe. It's possible, but like I fully accepted that like Styx A is borderline all pro. Gory was someone who I was actually relatively optimistic on heading into the split because I heard the Scrimbuck rumors and those paid off. You know,
you could have 3, maybe 4 players who are potentially all pro.
Yeah, River and Huhi work well together with him. So like for me, I think it might just be like, yeah, you're good. You're all in that kind of conversation, but you're more like a 3rd, 4th place team, and you don't have actual chance of winning the title, which is why I'm hesitant. But like. They have interesting drafts, I feel like. You know, like the Soraka Elise combo was brutal. That was really cool to see them like execute that. It sounded like I forget if they did an interview afterwards or something, but it wasn't like a super prepared comp. They kind of just like, oh, Ashe is through and Elise is up, we'll do this. And like they kind of just like, I don't know. I find that impressive when you show up with a draft that you didn't really want to get, but it still works well and you can actually mm-hmm. execute it kind of on the fly. Like it was impressive to me, but for some reason it's just like maybe it is that. Like I've seen Blabber, I've seen Inspired. You know, I've seen Spica.
What do you think's holding them outside of that championship title conversation then? Because I am kind of in the same boat where when I've tried to power rank them in my head, I'm like, yeah, like they're good, but I probably still see them as like, you know, they're going to finish 4th or something like that.
Yeah, they'll lose in the first round. They'll beat someone in the lower bracket.
But what is it? What is the difference then between them and the 3 teams above them that makes you believe in the
vibes?
Teams? Is it just that
there's some
you have a carry on those teams?
Nobody has said anything about top lane either, and that's probably the biggest community conversation
with
this team.
I definitely think it's true that of the top 4 teams, Licorice is quite substantially the weakest of those top laners.
So Impact, between Someday,
and Fudge.
Fudge, yeah.
Yeah, and I think all of them have like carry picks that they've broken out and I've been pretty happy with, and I don't feel like Licorice has quite been able to do that much this split, unless I'm forgetting a game.
Could be a really good time to actually be in that spot with a lot of tanks being powerful, though, too.
Yeah.
So
Licorice has had a couple of good games, but I agree overall it hasn't been his split.
Right. But like those other teams are talking about like triple threat teams, and like I just don't think that's true. In a best of 5 series, realistically, you're probably not going to win con through Licorice, and maybe that's one of the areas, but like, I don't know.
It's interesting, right? Because I do think it's I do think we have these kind of like subconscious bias of like, yeah. Oh, I've seen Stixxe, you know, not playing at this level or on a team this good for so many times. So it's like harder for me to like slot him in my mind as like, oh yeah, he can do just the same thing that Prince could do or whatever. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I just like, I'm having trouble believing it, I guess. But I do think that I am fully bought in and like on like River Gory is one of the best mid lane jungle duos. I think in the league, I think they've been playing really, really well. And while I would agree that Licorice is probably the bottom ranked out of that top four teams, I think potentially you could look at their mid jungle favorably against like almost any team. You know, when they're playing at their best, I think, you know, that is a way in for them. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, makes them kind of exciting. And I do hope that they can have a strong final week so that there is that tension going into that first round upper bracket, because I want it to be, you know, good series between these teams. I don't want it to be a real competition.
I actually have Stixxe, who he is, third best bottom lane in mm-hmm. the league. I have a, like, especially, and maybe it's because I was also casting.
Are you going to C9 FlyQuest on them?
I was casting the TSM game that they played. I was just watching them get blasted by 100 Thieves, and then I casted. So I was, you know, you're much closer, much more visceral, more experience
yeah.
to the other one. But that one kind of renewed my faith of Stixxe and who he has been, such a good recombination, basically, that I do have a decent amount of faith that was restored in this team. I still, though, feel like it should be a point of freaking take the win of being now considered, oh, top four team.
That's huge.
You know, people should take that win. There's not very many Golden Guardians fans. And they're getting just torn down at every turn, because it used to be, okay, so you're out, even battling for playoffs. You're the eighth place team. Ha 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 ha. And then like you climb up a little bit more and people are still like, ah, but you're only sixth. Ah, but you're only fourth. All right, well, come on, you gotta let them take a dub, you know, at some point is a pretty big accomplishment. And
I mean, we all think what, they eighth or something was our
yeah, exactly. Our and, they've and, massively. And right now I feel like, you know, they can swing higher than where they currently are. And I feel like they deserve to be high up where they are right now in fourth and with possibilities
yeah.
of taking swings.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They play CLG, Fly, and Dig. I think that's an easy 2-1 for them. And with FlyQuest, who knows, struggling how much, you could even potentially pull off that upset to really make people believe in you. My hot take is they shouldn't do that so that we continue to doubt them a little bit more. We eat up that... Sven slander. No one thinks they have any
they
real chance.
They can make another FU video.
Yeah, follow heading into up. Playoffs. No one believes in them, despite the fact they're an upper bracket team.
I think for them, if they can't get into third, though, getting C9 in the first round is rough. Because I probably would be betting against everyone against C9 right now.
Yeah, but that's the point. Yeah. Is then you get to shut Sven up. You shut up all the haters. You play them round
directly.
One.
Directly.
Yeah. That's the game plan right there. So I will continue to say that they are very good, to your point. Like, this is actually super impressive, you know, to be into this kind of conversation,
yeah.
given where everyone's expectations were. But I'm not sold yet on the title contender.
Yep. Now we got the clump. We got TSM, CLG, 100, all at 7 and 8. And we do have some big matchups between them. So TSM plays 100. That is going to be an absolutely massive game that could decide a lot of playoff implications. And that, I believe, is actually the first game. That one's on Wednesday between those two teams. So that is huge.
Of the clump, 100 Thieves are coming in with the most momentum. That this last weekend for them was like, they got sat down, they fired their coach, and they were like, get down to business now. Nate Shot showed up, and he was like, nobody's getting paid until you get some wins. And
no more
like,
Gucci.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I'm taking your deodorant.
No more Disneyland trips. but it was complete business for them. You know, it just, yes, their strength of schedule for that last week was not the greatest, and that's what people are definitely going to use.
But it was Golden Guardians, right?
To still tie them down. Yeah. And Dig.
Yep. and it was Golden Guardians.
Yep. And so, I feel like they are coming in with a lot of momentum and has rebuilt some of that. They talked about, too, I love the insight that players are giving now. It feels like they're giving more insight in a lot of these interviews after the games, where Closer was talking about, hey, it's actually been 2 weeks since we felt like we have really fixed a lot of problems. And last week,
that early game was just, you could tell they were all so pissed. Like, everyone's tweeting about, you know, damn, like, we really screwed our early game. If we just fix this, then we can actually play the game. And they had been having successful scrims, you know, based off of that. And so with that full dedicated focus on early game and being able to shore that up versus, you know, Golden Guardians and Dig, I think that does set them up for this hype kind of battle with TSM and CLG and this run towards the cutoff of playoffs in kind of a good situation. It's definitely controversial, especially because, you know, just putting together this roster, they were going to have a lot of haters and supporters.
100 Thieves has TSM, EG, and IMT. So if, like, you know, you could look at it like, oh, 50-50, expected loss, expected win.
Yeah, and that's why the first game against TSM is so important, because presumably you'll want 9 wins to be able to get it in, which means they need to go 2-1, which means that you kind of need to win that first one.
Yeah, basically I look at it as all three of these teams, you know, TSM play 100 Thieves, that's very important, but all three of those teams also have one really big top three opponent, basically. TSM have to play FlyQuest, CLG have to play Cloud9, 100 Thieves have to play EG.
Yep.
So they all have a really hard game, and then they have some...
I mean, we'll get into CLG in a second, because they definitely have the hardest strength of schedule. Yeah. But just to round up for 100 Thieves, the coaching change one was like something I had a lot of thoughts on, because like I talked about like how seeing their drafts in that week where they said they were still playing well, but they had the two horrendous early games back to back with two different drafts. I was saying like that's just like immediately after watching, I was like, there's a coaching problem. And people, NukeDuck had been doing the drafts all along. And I think like my point was not that like NukeDuck was some like the other guy was somehow controlling the drafts or anything like that, but like as a leader, like as what a coach should be of your team, to instill direction and confidence that you have was clearly lacking when you flip-flop that hard. So like, yeah, NukeDuck might have been the same guy on the stage either way, but like whatever was they were doing in scrims, the total lack, I felt like they had a lack of confidence in their drafts, because I don't understand like how you have such two radically different ideas.
Where they went like full late game to full early game.
Yeah. And it felt like such an overreaction that like a coach with like a trust, the team trusts him, and there's like this mutual respect that like you could be like, okay.
Doubting your preparation.
Yeah. And it's not just draft, just because like those are the picks you end up with, but like the whole system that leads you up there. So that's why I think the coaching change was not a surprise to me when I saw it come through, even though you're keeping the same coach for drafting. I'm still scared in this team, because I really want them in playoffs. Just like 100% for narrative reasons. Double Lift and Bjergsen, like you can hate them and you want them to fail. That's fine, but you want them to fail when they're playing
well.
They
have to be there to fail.
Yeah, they have to be there to fail. And you want them like being good when your team beats them. Yeah. So you can like watch. You don't just want to see them like limp out of playoffs at, you know, just below 500. So I am really of the teams on the bubble right now rooting for this as like the one team I want in. I don't, you know, like it's for shameless reasons, absolutely, about narrative or whatever. But like, yeah, I really hope that they can beat TSM here.
But it's exciting, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not like some fraudulent reason, because I think that, as you say, it's like people want to see, you know, the old greats be overtaken, but they want to see it like in a moment that feels like it has some gravitas, that it feels like it matters, right? You know, you want to see Bjergsen playing really well, but then he runs into JoJo and he's able to take him down, or not quite yet, right?
Yeah, or like Tenacity and Busio can be stars alongside the veterans. Like there's just so much more, I feel like so much potential with this team making it, that like I'm like, oh God, please. Please be good. It wasn't just like a 1 week random flash in the pan last week.
I mean, I think it would be really exciting, but so much on the line, I think, against the TSM match. And you know, with Bjergsen, XTSM, you know, Double Lift, XTSM and stuff, it's like obviously they would want to beat this org. TSM is also super low investment, it sounds like now, from what the players are sounding like. It's basically like Chawi and five guys in a dream, right? Like, I know they have a GM, and I think it was Solo.
And their GM is doing scouting.
Scouting, yeah.
For them.
Like, they basically have, like, it sounded like their entire staff was seven people, including the five pros. And then you look at TL, who's probably got like 20 or 30 or something, you know? It's like...
still got a chef showing up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably an exaggeration, maybe not that big, but some of these teams have very large staffs with multiple positional coaches, multiple analysts, you know, multiple scouts, et cetera, et cetera. So it is kind of interesting to see that, like, it almost reminds me of like the five guys in a dream, like out of the qualifying through the ladder in old Challenger series and stuff, where, you know, you just had to get high enough LP and then you could like win your way into the LCS. It almost feels like that, which is kind of funny to say, but
they're the Bad News Bears. They have no funding, you know. They showed up, they made their own team.
I mean, TSM is definitely the second team I want to get in. Sorry, CLG and Team Liquid at this point, but yeah, I think as much as TSM loses to 100 Thieves, they then we'll beat FlyQuest on Friday. That's my dream.
Mark's world. Scenario.
Yeah, somehow that happens.
I mean, it's possible for them for teams to get in with 8 with how it's looking because there's so many teams tied around there, and there's two teams that are just like digging L's from everyone. TL is the one that's looking like really tough, right? Like because they are sitting a game behind that clump, but there's basically 4 teams fighting for 2 spots, pretty much guaranteed. Like, or guaranteed, C9, Fly, EG, and Golden Guardians are in. And then it's TSM, CLG, 100 Thieves, and TL all fighting for those last 2 spots.
The thing that adds a lot of spice to this is CLG has looked pretty bad this week. They should have won that game against Dignitas and just, like, threw it with... I think they were like, we scaled! We can take any fight! And they just started playing terribly.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't keep track of ultimates still available, and then they chased into a small corridor versus two big AoE ultimates.
Yeah.
Infernum and Cassiopeia. I mean, you've all been there, right? You get some kills in a team fight, you're like, it's 5v3. Chase him down. Oops.
Yeah. Flash ult by Luger, so when he lands, he's just like, oh, wait a minute. I have no defensive tools left, and just gets exploded. And Tomo played those last 2 fights really well. But yeah, CLG has a tough week with Golden Guardians, TL, and C9. Like, realistically, that's potential 0-3 if they are actually, you know, struggling, because all these are playoff potential teams. Team Liquid can go beat Dig and CLG and then kind of get to 8-10 and then maybe get a tie with CLG. And, you know, if TSM does end up, let's say, lose to 100 Thieves, beat Dig and then lose to FlyQuest, it's very possible that there's this kind of like 3-way-ish tie, 8-10 tiebreaker scenario. I feel like that's very likely. I don't know. It just seems like such a mess at the bottom to like selfishly try and shoot content with teams. Who's like, who's making playoffs? I'm trying to shoot stuff for next week. What are you guys doing? it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I think TSM is another team that has really kind of like overperformed expectations.
Definitely.
TSM and Golden Guardians are very far away, I think, from where we had them. I think those were like our 8-9 teams, right? And we have 1 in 4th and 1 tied for 5th. So I think, you know, they've done a really good job kind of piecing things together. I think, again, you know, TSM is one of those teams where it's like mid-jungle has looked really good. Turtle has actually been playing quite well on the LCS stage too, which is interesting because I know when that was announced, all the NAACL guys were like, this guy's butt in Academy. Like, you know, there's no shot that he should be in LCS. But he seems to be playing actually a lot better in LCS than he was in NACL. And I don't know if that's just like a motivation thing or you're kind of like...
Support.
Yeah.
I actually did hear that his support was struggling.
Well, I mean, there can be that too, right? But it's just interesting to see that he's been able to kind of step up. He has had some like pretty borderline plays that went his way. Like the Caitlyn game, there was that one where he like, you know, flash ease in or whatever and like lives with like 10% HP, gets hit by his CC.
That's classic. That's Turtle. Turtle though, he's literally trained for 12 years doing that.
It is. I remember calling that out in the cast. I was like, this is classic Wild Turtle at his best, right? He's every time flashes up, he's flashing in and he was making it work. So it's been fun, and I think it's got to be fun for TSM fans to feel like a little bit of excitement around this team, because I feel like it's been a bit of a rough run for TSM, and it's nice to see them at least competing for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think if we were going to call our shots of these 4 teams fighting, which 2 do you see making? I said I want 100 Thieves and TSM. What about you guys?
I think if I was looking at it from all of the data and just
pure objective.
Going with pure percentages, those off of the last 3 weeks would probably be the ones that I would put too. But CLG have done their counter logic poor performances where they throw some games and bust some. So now it's time for the other side of the countering the logic and taking down some teams you don't expect them to win to make it into playoffs.
Right.
So it's actually all according to plan. For CLG.
The classic Faith Kobe overrides his logical thinking brain.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is Kobe-ian, but I feel like TL has gotten a bit better over the last couple weeks.
Also, if you want to fully index in your scrim information,
TL's been
this
scrim
is one that people scrims. Keep saying.
So practice has got to pay off sometime.
Keep saying,
right?
Always going.
Right, guys? Practice.
Scrim bucks.
Yeah.
Still good here.
And. Support changes have been very beneficial for this team.
Yep.
RJJ can play some engage to his heart's content.
Yep. I think 100 Thieves is the one that I feel the most belief in right now in actually getting one of those 2 slots. And I don't know. I mean, this isn't really like if I was going purely off of logic, I'd say 100 Thieves and TSM, just because TSM has like Dig, which is pretty guaranteed win, and they're already game up on TL. But CLG has been looking rough. I've been losing faith in them, and I've been gaining a little bit of faith in TL. So I think maybe I'll say 100 Thieves in TL.
Damn, that's the spicy one. I hope secretly I don't mind if you're right, because that would at least make my playoff pictures look a lot better, because two of the teams I predicted being playoffs would then be in playoffs. But
because I could see TL beating Dig for sure, and CLG's looking rough, so I could see them getting eight and then losing the EG and having a tiebreaker at eight and actually
winning
being
tiebreaker.
Yeah. So I don't think it's like that far fetched. But I mean, obviously TSM's up a game. CLG I think is actually in the roughest spot, just because I think they have a pretty
they have the hardest schedule. Yeah, definitely.
Yep. But who knows? It's definitely not out of reach. For Immortals and Dig, even though they are losing, at least I will say, you know, quickly on Immortals, it's been nice to see Bolulu in there
and playing
his style. Vel'Koz, but also he played the Zoe game, won a game on Zoe, and then got it banned a couple times. Well, no one else is playing it.
Yeah.
So I'm caring a bit. I just have liked that, you know, with MNS, obviously it came in, C9 supported him, and they just won all the games. They're not really winning games here, but it's cool to see that Immortals is actually like bought in on him playing his style, and they're playing towards him. And I have felt that they have at least looked like they could win all the games that they were losing. Except I think there was maybe one that they got super blown out in, but like they've had competitive games. It's been actually enjoyable to watch and cast again.
This is what I always ask for and always want of our bottom teams, is to embrace the strengths and identities of your individual players and don't try and play meta. If you're a bottom team and you're clearly a bottom team, do not play meta. Please, for the love of God, don't just try and copy everyone else. You're clearly worse than them. Don't copy. Do something different that is going to give you an advantage of they're not used to playing against this, or give you different angles to win games. And that's how you're still going to gain fans, even if you're at the bottom of the standings, by being unique. People want to watch interesting drafts. They will tune in for that anyways. They will still cheer for you. You will actually be the hero underdog that people want to root for, instead of just another Zeri team or just another, you know, Yumi using scumbag.
I mean, for on the Immortals angle, they almost beat Golden Guardians. If I remember, that was a pretty scrappy game back and forth. And then they almost beat TSM. And like after on the interview, you know, they're talking about Bululu's Vel'Koz, calling it Belveth, just like being like, what does this champ do? Like, what is this that's happening to us? Like, it was really funny hearing them talk about it. And like Bolulu, I remember hearing that he was in academy at the start of the year, and I was like, what? Like from Turkey, the guy who's been to like international stages, I've cast him like so many times. I was like, I hope this dude plays in the LCS, because he's legitimately good, and he's just a really nice personality the times that we have interviewed him. So I'm excited for Bolulu. On the Dignitas side, it's actually a somewhat similar story, I guess, with Tomo coming in. They're still struggling. They're not winning a ton of games, but he individually has looked so much better. And like to step into a team that is kind of dead in the water and have a positive impact does speak well of you in some sense. Even the game he struggled with a lot in CLG, he was getting dove. He was like, I think he was like 0-4 at some point or something like that. And then to like keep your head on you and play team fights out correctly, the time where he jumped on the Aesol and forced him back so he couldn't actually like do the resetting.
The flash over the wall.
Yeah.
The dragon pit.
Yeah, that one. And then landing the ult on Luger, you know, like it was like, oh shit. Pretty impressive stuff. So I like him too.
Yeah, he's been playing with confidence. Both teams, rough final schedules though. Immortals has 3 wins, and they're playing EG, C9, and 100 Thieves.
Here we go.
So they're going to finish with 6 wins, of course. And that'll wrap it up, I think, for us for this episode of The Dive. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any episodes of The Dive. And if you want to get your Twitter question featured in an episode, use the hashtag TheDiveLOL, as well as hashtag TheDiveLOLGiveaway to qualify for the 2KRP giveaway. This is the final week you can actually sign up for that, and the winners is going to be announced on the second ever Splitual Divies, which Kobe loves the term Splitual, so we had to bring that back.
Splitual! Woohoo!
And LCS regular season spring split, wraps up this week with Super Week, starting Wednesday with FlyQuest versus Cloud9. That is a banger. 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll see you there.
Wednesday.
2
p.m.
PST.